Welcome to this week's podcast from Church on the Rock. We hope that it will challenge and inspire you to be a more passionate follower of Jesus. For more information about Church on the Rock, visit us at cotrcalera.com.
So good to see you this morning. And again, I hope that your Christmas and holiday season was a really, really great time. And one of the things I want to do this morning is talking about, it's this transitional period. It's the last day of 2023, moving into 2024. It's, you know, a time of the year where we're all thinking, you know, about new beginnings and fresh starts, and whether or not you're into New Year's resolutions. And, you know, we all kind of, you know, try to push the reset button on our life. And I think, you know, more than anything, one of the things that I wanted to do is just talk about something that I think is really simple, but it's very important. It's an important aspect of our walk with God, and oftentimes, you know, can be something that's just so easily overlooked. But we see it in the life of David, and, you know, of course, we know there's a lot of things, that are good about David's life. There's some things in David's life that weren't so good, but we're going to be looking at you know, something in particular, especially early on in David's life, that really kind of set him apart and made him stand out. And I think that's, you know, some important qualities that we want to look at in our own life as well. But when you look at just, you know, David for a second, if you just talk about a couple of, you know, facts about David, is that he was one of eight boys in the house. You know, there were probably, more than likely, there were more than just eight kids. But we know that there were eight boys, and he was the youngest of the eight. He was considered to be the greatest king in Israel's history. Was born approximately around 1040 BC, 1040 BC, and lived to be about 70 years old. He was considered to be a man after God's own heart. And even with being this guy that was considered to be a man after God's own heart, was a guy who made a lot of real mistakes and did a lot of, you know, things in his life that he, I'm sure, regretted, that he repented of and you know, made right. But you know, didn't. It still cost him to, you know, pay the price for some of those things. And then we also know that he wrote a good portion of the Psalms, including a lot of the prophecies about the coming Christ and stuff. So what we're going to be doing is looking at a story in 1 Samuel chapter 16. And this is the story where David gets anointed to be king of Israel. And there are some things about the story that I just want to kind of highlight and point out this morning as we kind of move into this. So we're going to read probably about 13 verses here in 1 Samuel 16. So just kind of bear with me. We'll have the verses up on the screen if you didn't bring your Bible with you this morning. But it says right here, 1 Samuel 16, verse 1, it says, "Now the Lord said to Samuel, 'How long will you grieve over Saul, since I have rejected him from being king over Israel? For fill your horn with oil and go, and I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite. For I have provided for myself a king among his sons.' And Samuel said, 'How can I go? If Saul hears it, he will kill me.' And the Lord said, 'Take a heifer with you and say, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord, and invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what you shall do. And you shall anoint for me him whom I declare to you.' And Samuel did what the Lord commanded and came to Bethlehem. The elders of the city came to meet him, trembling, and said, 'Do you come peaceably?' And he said, 'Peaceably I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Consecrate yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice.' And he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. And when they came, he looked at Eliab and he said, 'Surely the Lord's anointed is before him.' But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as a man sees. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart.' Then Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel. And he said, 'Neither has the Lord chosen this one.' Then Jesse made Shammah pass by. And he said, 'Neither has the Lord chosen this one.' And Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel. And Samuel said to Jesse, 'The Lord has not chosen these.' Then Samuel said to Jesse, 'Are these all your, are all your sons here?' And he said, 'There remains yet the youngest, but behold, he keeps the sheep. He is keeping the sheep.' And Samuel said to Jesse, 'Send to get him, for we will not sit down till he comes here.' And he sent him and brought him in. Now he was ruddy and had beautiful eyes and was handsome. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers, and the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David from that day forward, and Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. All right, so if there was a title to my message here, we would call it like the low man on the totem pole. All right, have you ever been the low man on the totem pole? Anybody here? I mean, I know some of you guys aren't the low man anymore, but if you've ever been the low man before, the low man is not a fun place to be, right? I mean, it's just not. I've been the low man before. In master's commission, when I was a student in master's commission, when you were first year, you were considered to be low man. You're just, you're the guy that everybody bossed around and told what to do, and that's the way it goes. And the truth be known is that even beyond that, when I was working at my second job as a pastor, I was constantly referred to as the low man on the totem pole. We would sit in staff meetings, and of course, I know I'm saying this like y'all need to feel sorry for me. You don't, because it was mainly a joke. And my pastor, who I love dearly and is a great friend of mine, even to this day, it was because I was from Alabama, and I was in my early 20s, and I was the newest staff member on staff. I was always the low man. And I was constantly reminded of my low man status at the church. Even on Sunday mornings, our pastor down there, I would be the butt of all his jokes. Because for some reason, because I was in Florida and I was from Alabama, it's just a natural thing for him to just make fun of Alabama people. And since I was the low man on the staff, he would constantly, and I can't even think of all the things that he would say to make fun of Alabama people. Now, I'm sorry, all of you on here, you're looking at me like, who is this mean guy that's so bad? All right, before you get too upset, don't hold him against him. He's a really nice guy, and this is what he always said. He said, Paul, he said, every time I make fun of you, I endear you to our congregation, all right, because they come to your defense, and it makes them like you more. And this was his justification for making fun of me all the time. And I'm like, I don't know. Is it really that? But I didn't really care. It didn't really bother me. None. It was always fun, that kind of thing. And really, towards the end of my tenure there, I wasn't the low man on the totem pole anymore because we hired in other staff members, and I got to look at them and be like, "Hi, you're the low man now." And I got my last laugh because that's when Alabama football began to be really good, and he was a Gator fan. And then we beat them in the SEC championship game that year, and Tebow cried, and I was like, "Now who's laughing?" This kind of thing. So, but of course, during that particular time between 2000 and 2009, 2008, Alabama was no good, so we were constantly being made fun of, by the Gator fans, and that's just I lived in enemy territory. But I was the low man on the totem pole there, and all, especially probably the first 4 or 5 years there, that was just my duty. Like if there was something that nobody wanted to do, then guess what? I ended up having to be the one to do it, and it is what it is, and I just would go about doing it. And I'm sure when you look at this and you read this particular story about David, guess what David is? David's the low man, okay? Like, David is so low that he didn't even get invited. Like, he didn't even get invited to the sacrifice. So, like, Samuel's coming in to make a sacrifice and says, "Hey, Jesse, get all of your sons. Get all your sons and bring them so we can consecrate them at the sacrifice." And Jesse's like, "David is so low down the pole that, like, I'm not even going to invite him because there's just no way this is the guy." Okay, just no way. And when you look at David's life, that's exactly what we see. He's the low man around the house. He's the youngest son, so the youngest son is having to do all the dirty work. The reason why David was watching the sheep was because that's what the youngest son did. And watching sheep was not a badge of honor. Okay, that's not, I don't know if you've ever watched sheep before, okay? I wish I had this. I know this is not funny to y'all because I can only see it in my head, all right? But I watched this reel the other day. I was on Facebook or something like this, and it was this guy. that was like, the whole meme was like, this is what I feel like helping people out. And it was so funny because it was this, there was this long ditch that, like, you know, in between two valleys, this really long ditch that kind of, and there was this guy that the sheep had fallen in this ditch, and this guy is down, is a shepherd, obviously. I think he has a, he's in this ditch, and he helps, and he gets the sheep out the ditch, and the sheep takes off running and runs a little curves and falls back into the ditch, like, head first. It was just like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Because sheep are like, sheep are literally the dumbest animals that there are. They're just so dumb. It's they sheep are known for just like walking off the edge of cliffs, like, it just, you know, they can't fight for themselves. They can't defend for themselves. They can't even find their own food. They need help. And, you know, it's really interesting that the Bible actually compares us as human beings to sheep. But it's just the truth. And so watching sheep is not a great thing. But David was the one that was having to do it. And so he was this low man. And, you know, he had to watch sheep because that's what unimportant people did. And so this, and we see the simple fact that his father didn't even think that he was worthy enough to be invited to the sacrifice. And, you know, kind of gives you a picture of the status and place that David had just within his own family. And not just even in his own family, but also probably with even within his own community. That he was just the low guy that, you know, did whatever. He did the lowest job that nobody else wanted to do because everybody else was more important than him. And there are times in our lives, you know, where, you know, we don't maybe necessarily feel like somebody has called us or made us the low man or this kind of thing, but maybe we can feel like that, you know, I don't have a lot of value, or, you know, I'm not doing anything great in my life, or I don't have a lot of stuff going on, or maybe we just feel like the mundane things of life have just overcome us, and we're in this just kind of rut where we're just going through the motions, and we're doing things that, you know, while it may create value from the, in the sense of, you know, bringing home money to provide for our family, it would just can feel like that maybe we're just spinning our wheels and stuff like that. And so oftentimes we can feel like maybe we're the low man, or and we're just doing a bunch of random things that mean nothing. But when we look at this, I want to look at something here about David's life and why David, even being the low man, put himself in a position for promotion with God. And what is it about David that caused him to do those things? And, you know, so when we look at this, I think one of the first things we need to understand is that Saul was chosen by man to be king, but eventually he was rejected by God. But David was chosen by God not because of his appearance, not because of his education, not because of his accomplishments, not because of any kind of outward achievement. And we even read this passage here in 1 Samuel chapter 16 where God is telling Samuel, he's saying, man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. And what is it about David that put him in a position to receive favor and promotion from God? And that's what I want to look at this morning. What is it about David that put him, even in the lowest position he could possibly be in life, what are the characteristics about David that put him in a position where God said, I'm promoting you, right? Because we could feel like in our own life that we're in a low position, or we're in obscurity, or we're in a place where we're doing nothing, or we got nothing important going on in our life. But if we understand certain principles, we can understand about putting ourselves in a position where God can do something for us, all right? And the first thing that we see about David, and here's the thing that David did, and that's the thing that I would tell you to do, is do what is in front of you like it's the most important thing you can do, all right? Do what's in front of you like it's the most important thing that you can do. And this is what David did, all right? And, you know, you can feel like a low man in many different places in your life. Maybe even at your job, you can feel like that your job is the least important. I remember my first job when I was a teenager. I was working at Wendy's, and I don't know, I probably worked there a month, maybe two. I don't know. I hated it, but it was part of growing up, right? And I literally, all I did was the fries. That I don't know, for some reason, I could sweep and I could cook fries. They're like, put the fries in there. That's all we want you to do is just make the fries. All right, and look, that's about as low as you can get. Like, they won't even let me flip burgers. You know, they won't even let me take people's orders. Okay, but you know what? I just I did what I was supposed to do. I worked hard. As a matter of fact, you know, outside of my first ministry position in my life, and that's another whole story for another day. And some of you are all well aware. Every job I've ever had, people told me that if I ever wanted to come back, just let them know. All right, because. And this is not just being in church and being a pastor. This is just an issue of just working and doing the best job. When we moved here to plant this church, the first job I found planting the church here was, and some of this, you know, this may be prehistoric to some of y'all, but it was throwing newspapers for the Birmingham News. Like, I was a glorified newsie is what I was. And I know they don't even do that anymore. Like, you don't even get newspapers anymore. All right, but back then, I would get up at 12 o'clock. I would drive to a warehouse in River Chase. I would walk into a warehouse, and I would bag 250 to 350 newspapers. I would stuff them in my car, and I would drive around, and I would throw newspapers. And I did this for an entire year. And you do it every day because every day people want their papers. All right, so Christmas morning, yeah, I'm throwing papers. Sunday morning was the worst because it was like 350 to 400 papers. They were always the big ones, you know. So they would take up my whole car. You know, I'm just stacked full of papers, and I'm driving around in the middle of the night thinking, what am I doing here? What am I doing with my life? I am throwing papers for the Birmingham News, all right? But guess what? I did it to the best of my ability. I worked hard. I didn't want to make mistakes. I wanted to do the best job I could possibly do with what I was doing. It was a terrible job, terrible job. I mean, I spent many nights crying, driving around Pelham, throwing newspapers into people's yards, thinking that, what am I doing with my life? This is I just left a church where I had everything I could possibly want. I was in my pastor's will to take over the church if I wanted to, and now I'm up here trying to plant a church in a school nobody wants to come to. And I'm throwing papers for the Birmingham News. But guess what I did? I did it as good as I could possibly do it. And when I left that job, because God gave me another job, another opportunity that was better than that one, they wanted me to stay. And they were like, please come back. We want you to come back. Right? It was a terrible job. It was a terrible place. And so what David did, though, okay, even though he was the lowest man on the totem, he was the youngest son, taking the worst job, is that he did his job to the best of his ability, and he did it like it was the most important thing he could do. So when we do what we're doing with our life, regardless of what 2023 brought you, and regardless of where you see yourself going in 2024, whatever it is that is in front of you, whether you think it's the most terrible thing in the world or whether it's the best thing in the world, just do it to the best of your ability. Do it the best way you can. Okay, and this is not just a church thing, but this is a life thing that because when we do these things, we're not doing them for ourselves. We're doing them as we're doing them unto the Lord, that everything we do is for the Lord. And so, but even in the church, when I come on a Sunday morning, like, I want to be the best greeter that I can be. I want to be the best usher. I want to watch the kids better than anybody else and lead worship. Because I want to do what I do to the best of my ability. And David was that guy. Okay, he found favor with God because he was a good shepherd. He wasn't a poor shepherd. Like, God wouldn't have, like, do you think God would have said, this guy can run the nation if he can't even run so few little sheep in the backyard? I mean, like, what we see here is long before Jesus came along and said, if you will be faithful with little, God will give you much. We see David being faithful with little, and God saying, I'm going to anoint you and give you a lot more. So regardless of where you feel like you are, whether you're the low man or you're a little bit higher up, you say, you know what? I'm going to do what I'm doing to the best of my ability. I'm going to give it my best. And listen, you know, David's on, and you say, how do you know David was a good shepherd? Well, you know, it tells us in the Bible that he was. In 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 34, David says this, but David said to Saul, your servant used to keep sheep for his father. And when there came a lion or a bear and took a sheep, I don't even know what the, it's probably got to be a typo, from the flock, I went after him, struck him, and delivered it out of his mouth. And if he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Like what in the world? I'm just sitting there thinking, like, David was a dude, okay? You can sit here and say what you want, but David was a dude. Like, he says, so a lion or a bear, like, if they attacked him, David's like, I just catch him by the beard and I just kill him. Like, I don't know, that doesn't seem real, but somehow it was. But, you know, like, at some point, like I'm just sitting here thinking, like, if I was a shepherd, I'd be like, man, sometimes you just got to cut your losses, you know? I mean, like, hey, you know, that's just one sheep. Just, we can get another one, you know? Next spring when they start having sheep again, we'll get another one. Just got to let that one go. But David said, no, I'm going to get it. I'm going to get it back. That's how we know David was a good shepherd, because David said he was. Before David ever went and killed Goliath, before he ever had the opportunity to win a huge, huge battle in his life, he was winning the small ones. Because where he, in his life, where he was the low man doing the worst job that a family member could do, he did it to the best of his ability. And he did it like it was the most important thing in his life that he could do. I'm going to save the sheep. I'm going to watch the sheep. I'm going to save the sheep. And I'm going to do what it is. And this is what brought favor in his life. Right, he wasn't doing these things to get a raise or to become king or to get some kind of promotion. The only thing he did is he just knew that one of the best ways to please God is by being faithful to do what he had been asked to do and to do it to the best of his ability. That's it. In Colossians chapter 3, verse 23, it says, whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord, not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. Whatever you do, you may have a boss that is a man or a woman or something like that, right? But you don't work for them. You work for the Lord. So whatever your job is, you do it unto the Lord. You do it to the best of your ability because it is worship unto God, because it honors the Lord. And you know this, that regardless of how your boss treats you, that you have this promise in God's word that God will reward you if you do it unto him. God will reward you. And look, it does, like, I mean, David's just minding his own business one day, and the next thing he knows, somebody's dumping a whole bottle of oil all over his head, and he's like, I'm the king. Now, he wasn't really the king there, but he was about to be, you know, 15 years later or so. In a moment, God can change it. In a moment, you could spend years of your life in obscurity watching sheep doing the worst job ever. In a moment, God can change it. You don't have to see it coming. David didn't see it coming. But what you have to do is just trust that God is faithful to accomplish his word over you. When he says he's going to do it, he'll do it. And it can happen in a moment that God will do it. The second thing I think that's important to is that we carry a heart of worship with us wherever we go. So for David, this was going out into a field watching sheep. That David was a worshiper. And he carried this heart of worship with him everywhere he went. That he was a worshiper, and he was a worshiper of God even while he was watching sheep, doing the worst job he could possibly do. Now, how do we know that? Well, we know it because the scripture tells us this, all right? There was a moment in Saul's life where he's being tormented, and some of his counselors suggest that he should have somebody come and play some music for him to calm his spirit. And we find it in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 17 and 18, and it says, so Saul said to his servants, provide for me a man who can play well and bring him to me. And one of the young men answered, behold, I have seen a son of Jesse of the Bethlehemite, who is skillful in playing, a man of valor, a man of war, prudent in speech, a man of good presence, and the Lord is with him. Right? Now, David didn't get good at playing the lyre. You know, 2 weeks before he had an opportunity to go play, you know, before Saul. No, he, I mean, more than likely, I think probably, you know, I mean, what is there to do while you're out watching sheep all day? You know, I don't know. Throw rocks. I mean, I'm assuming at some point he got really good with a sling. You know what I'm saying? Because he got really good at it. So it's just like what any boy does when he's out in the field watching sheep, I'm sure. You're probably picking up rocks, you know, playing, building. But at some point, he probably got some interest in playing an instrument. And maybe that was, you know, cultural. Maybe that was something that just happened in their day. But he got really good at playing this instrument, so much so that he became known for it. Like one of the guys working in Saul's, you know, cabinet or group of leadership, you know, knew about this guy, this boy David, and his abilities to play and to bring soothing music and all of these kinds of things. And so it wasn't just that. We know, according to Scripture, that David was a man after God's own heart. Like he loved God, he worshiped God. This was important. We see, you know, you remember the story where David, you know, he's bringing in the Ark of the Covenant, and what is he doing? And they're bringing Ark, you know, he's worship, he's celebrating, and he's dancing in the streets before the Lord because the presence of God had come into the city. Even so much so that his, you know, one of his wives criticized him for it and says, you know, you're being, you know, ridiculous. And he said, you know, I'll be even more undignified than this. And David didn't become that way as a man. He learned that way as a young boy. Even probably while he was watching sheep in the field, he learned how to play this instrument and to write this music and to sing these songs before the Lord. He became a person who carried worship with him everywhere he went. And that's what created that opportunity. Rob, if you'll go ahead and come. If you look at the first 80 or so Psalms written in Scripture, those were written by David. The first 80, if you go through and look at those Psalms, you know, there's, you know, a lot, 140-something Psalms, 150 Psalms, right? 80 of them. The first 80 were written by David. And in those first 80 Psalms, we have some of the most beautiful expressions of worship that we find in Scripture from David. You know, ranging all different kind of places of emotion, places of need, places of desire. You know, David is the one that wrote, as the deer panteth for the water, so my soul longs for you. You think about that, the meaning behind that of a deer who's running for his life and is in a position where he's thirsty, he needs the water, he's drawn to it. David says that, man, just like that moment, as the deer desires and for that, so my soul longs for you. It runs for you. Some of the most, you know, the most powerful words that we have in Scripture of worship and adoration to God are found in the writings of David. And those things didn't just come, you know, just from nowhere. They came from a lifestyle of worshiping God. He was a true worshiper. A lot of those songs were probably written by David when he was young, when he was watching sheep. He was a true worshiper, and he lived a life of continual praise and worship to God. We see those two things that David, what set David up to be different? What set David up for promotion is that he did what was in front of him like it was the most important thing in the world, and he worshiped God while he was doing it. He had a heart of worship to God. Now, when David was anointed king, God came in and he brought Samuel in. He anointed him, poured the oil on his head. And Samuel said, "You're going to be the next king of Israel." What did David do from there? What happened to David? You know what he did? He went back to watch sheep. What he did. As a matter of fact, if you look, you'll see that, and I know I referenced this a little bit earlier, it was probably about 15 years or so before David ever became king. He went back and he watched sheep. The king of it, he had so much humility about himself that he could be anointed the king of Israel and still go back. You know, he didn't say, "Hey, Dad, can like one of my other brothers now watch sheep? I mean, I'm the king. I'm the king. You heard Samuel. I'm the king." He just went back to watching sheep. And at every moment of his life, as God gave him opportunity, he stepped into that opportunity to do what God had placed in front of him. So when he got the opportunity to play music in front of Saul, he stepped into that opportunity and did it to the best of his ability. And guess what? He was hated for it. Yet Saul ended up trying to attack him and kill him and all of this kind of stuff. When Saul became jealous of him, all this. When Goliath was standing before the nation and threatening the nation of Israel to take what God had already covenantly given it to the nation of Israel, David was ready to step into that position. Why? Because every step along the way, all David did was he said, "I'm going to be the best person I can in this moment of my life doing what it is that I'm doing." And every time that God gave him an opportunity for promotion, he stepped right into it because he was ready for it. Right? He even says so much that the reason why he was ready to face Goliath was because he faced the lion and the bear. If he had been like me and just said, "You know, I'm going to cut my losses. We'll get another sheep one day. All right, let's let these go." Then David wouldn't have been ready to face Goliath. And he wouldn't have had the experiences from his past where he was excellent at what he did to prepare him for that moment that he was going to face in that time. All right. If he wouldn't have been a true worshiper of God, he probably wouldn't have been confident in the covenant relationship that God had created with Israel. Because that was the main reason why Goliath was such a problem, was because Goliath was trying to take away what God had already promised the nation of Israel. And David said, "That can't be. How is this guy going to step in here and take away what God has given to us?" And there's going to be times in your life, listen, where the enemy is going to try to step into your life and he's going to try to take away what God promised for you to have. And if you're not a true worshiper, all right, and you're not spending time in the presence of God, then you know what? You're going to find yourself where you're going to believe that lie. And you're going to believe that you can't overcome. And you're going to believe that maybe the promises of God are not for you. I can tell you, you know, myself, in my own life, and just the other day, I feel like I was reflecting about this, that in the moments, in the seasons of my life where I am more intentional about praying, more intentional about worshiping, more intentional about spending time in the presence of God. In those moments of my life, I find myself more filled with faith, filled with more faith and boldness concerning the issues that we face in this world that are not from God. And in the moments of my life where I'm not very intentional and I'm not spending enough time in prayer and I'm not spending enough time in worship, I find myself very like, man, this is, you know, like questioning the tough things about life and the tough things that this world has to offer. And like, I don't know, man, is this something that God can do? And you know, because we all have those questions, we all have those thoughts. But the reason why David was able to overcome everything that he faced in his life was because of these two principles that he had established inside of himself. He said, "I'm going to be the best person I can be with what I have in front of me. And I'm going to be a true worshiper of God. And I'm going to do whatever it is that God has placed in my hands to do. Whatever it is." You know, when Moses was standing before the Lord, And the Lord was saying, I'm going to use you to go rescue a nation. Moses was like, how am I going to do that? Like, what am I going to do? And God says, what is it that you have in your hand? He says, well, I have a staff. He's like, all right, use that. Okay. A stick is going to help me rescue a nation. And somehow God was able to use a stick to rescue a nation. A stick and an obedient man. That's it. So oftentimes God looks at us, and what we do oftentimes is we kind of look at ourselves and think, well, I don't have this and I don't have that. I don't, we make all the reasons why we can't do something for God or can't whatever. And God just says, I just want you to use whatever you have in your hand. In other words, whatever's in front of you, just use it. Use what God has given you. Use what God has given you, and God can use you to do great things. And so here's the thing that, just drawing this back, moving into 2024, can we just be, like, it's simple. It really is. It's simple. Can we just say, you know what, God, this year I'm going to do what's in front of me to the best of my ability, and I'm going to do it for you. And I'm going to be a true worshiper. I'm just going to worship you. Everywhere I go, I'm going to worship you. I'm going to worship you. And you know what? That may mean that you need to turn off the country music station and, or 103.7 or whatever your favorite, Spotify playlist is or something, and turn on some worship music. You know, it's crazy. It's like, I know I've made reference to this before. It's something that I've thought about here recently as well. So, when I'm in my car, I'm usually listening to talk radio, but there are times where, like on the weekends, the talk radio is not very good, and, during the holidays, the talk radio is not very good. And then I'll have moments where my daughter, Skylar, will get in the car, and she's like, Dad, can we just listen to some music? This is so boring, And we'll play some music. I'll turn on like some country music or something like that. And guess what? The more country music I have playing in my car, the more I find myself walking around the house singing country music to myself. It's like, what am I singing? I know I told y'all about a funny one a couple months ago. I can't even remember. Was it Me and Tequila All Day Long or something like that? I can't even remember the name of it. I was like, what am I singing right now? What am I singing? I don't even care about this stuff. I don't even like half of this stuff. But what it's doing is it's this music that I'm constantly exposing myself, even though it's relatively unintentionally, it's affecting the way that I think and the things that I do and the things that I say and the things that's running through my mind. And sometimes, you know what? Maybe I need to cut some of that stuff out so I can get better things running through my mind, right? Just little things. Will you stand to your feet this morning? Let's be the best we can be with what God has placed in front of us. Let's be the best we can be with what God has placed in front of us. Listen, you may not like your job. You may not like your situation. You may not like the family dynamics that you have in your house right now. You may not like the relationship status that you're in. You may not like the way that your kids act, or you may not like the way that you're having to spend all your time. But let's focus on something a little bit different and just say, what can I do to be the best that I can be? Maybe your marriage isn't the greatest right now that it's ever been. Instead of worrying about what the other person needs to do better, why don't we say, what can I do better? What can I do to be the best husband? What can I do to be the best wife? What can I do to be the best father, the best mother? What can I do to be the best son, to be the best daughter? What can I do to be the best employee, the best worker? What can I do to be the best servant of God? What can I do to be the best? And what are the ways in my life when I can incorporate more? more worship into my life, more time of intimacy with the Father. Those are some things that we can think about and try to adjust and try to change the way we think and the way that we focus on life. Come on, we're going to worship the Lord together. If I have some prayer team members, maybe you'll come down the front. If you have anything that you need prayer for this morning, we want to pray for you. If you're sick, you're going through a bad time, you've had a bad year, and you're looking for a new year, we want to pray for you because we believe that God works miracle-working power in our life. And he'll do it this morning. And if not, we want to close out this morning worshiping the Lord. There's nothing better we can do.